Welcome to another episode of the United in Accessibility podcast. Today, we're thrilled to introduce three remarkable individuals who have left an indelible mark in the accessibility field. Meet our first guest, Sam Evans, serving as the certification manager at IAAP. With a wealth of experience, Sam has been pivotal in the global expansion of professional certifications, now reaching professionals in over 100 countries. Her expertise extends to disability strategy, digital accessibility, program management, and brand strategy. Our second guest is Mike Paciello, the founder of WebAble. As an accessibility ambassador and mentor, Mike has garnered recognition, including the 2016 Nobility Lifetime Achievement Award. His extensive contributions range from co-chairing committees to founding web accessibility tools consortiums. Last but not least, we have Matt Ader, the Vice President at vSparrow. Matt contributes to making technology accessible for the visually impaired. His extensive experience in business development and government contracting makes him a valuable asset in the realm of accessibility. Join us as we dive into an enriching conversation about the state of overlays and discuss the nuances, challenges, and innovations surrounding overlays in the digital field.
Hi, my name is Sam Evans, and I work with the International Association of Accessibility Professionals in G3ICT. And I'm here today with Matt Ader and Mike Paciello. And I wanted to invite these two gentlemen. We're going to talk about the state of overlays and accessibility. I do want to speak to, just for a moment, if you'll bear with me, I'm going to read from the screen because it's a very long text. IAAP and the European Disability Foundation have an overlay statement. And I just want to preface our conversation before we start talking about that. So IAAP believes that overlays, plugins, or widgets must never impede access to users' assistive technology, choice of browsers, and or operating system features. IAAP therefore does not support members making false claims about any products or services, which could be harmful either directly or indirectly to end users, including people with disabilities or the integrity of the accessibility profession. More specifically, in relation to overlay technologies, at this time, companies should refrain from using marketing language implying that a website or application can be made fully accessible to all people with disabilities by simply installing a plugin or widget without requiring additional steps or services. Here's more information, and you can type in the word overlay on the IAAP website to find the full statement. But I think today we're going to talk a little bit about interoperability and assistive technologies in overlays. So Matt, I'll let you introduce yourself and then Mike, and then we'll go from here.
Thanks, Sam. My name is Matt Ader, and I'm the Vice President of vSparrow and sister or one of our organizations, TPGI. And for those who don't know, vSparrow is a manufacturer of a product called JAWS for Windows.
And Mike Paciello, founder and CEO of WebAble, former founder of TPG, without the I, and just a general consultant in the areas of accessibility of people with disabilities.
So do one of the two of you want to talk about, Mike, do you want to speak a little bit about how and when overlays came into play, and then we'll talk about assistive technologies, then let the two of you kind of play on that?
Well, it's a good question. The when I think is still a little bit fuzzy. I know DQ had, from an accessibility standpoint, had probably foray into this area of overlays. IBM dabbled in it several years ago too. So we're talking about approximately 8 to 10 year period where these things have been around. So it's not the whole concept of an overlay is really not much different to me from an emulator in the 70s and 80s when I first got into this business. You're pretty familiar with the concept, but functionally, what we have today are several corporations worldwide, all over the world, who are looking to solve an industry level problem. I think that's really, it's meant to be for the users, but it's really to solve an industry level. And that is how to create a turnkey like solution. So turn it on, it works, and we solve the accessibility situation. That's the paradisaic look at what they're pitching. So that gives you, what we're finding out, of course, is that nothing ever works that easy. I thought you took Triviana, Steve, a wonderful discussion this morning about the diversity, ironically enough, of what artificial intelligence has actually created throughout our industry, such that it actually creates a situation that's not equitable. We don't have equitable use. You always been talking about accessible use and a usable interface for people with disabilities. But now we've got this discriminatory type notion that technology is making these decisions, random decisions, on frankly bad data that is really not being contributed fully by from individuals with disabilities, and how they use interface, how they use software, how they use an application, and of course, where it's more widely known, how they use the web.
So Matt, we're talking about AT and native AT users, or maybe not native AT users. Could it speak to a little bit about how assistive technology and some of these products?
So as a, and I'm blind, so as a screen reader user, you know, simply it basically scrapes the DOM or goes through the website from a simplicity point of view and reads the content to me as I navigate. And I use different techniques to navigate to different types of elements or to interact with different types of elements. So, for example, a button could be interacted with a space bar or a enter key. And for somebody who's using a mouse, they're going to click it, right? And so where the challenges come in from an interoperability of this is that if for some reason that tool has decided to make something a different type of element than what I expect it to be, if it's meant to be a checkbox, but because the overlay looked at the code and said, hey, I think it's really a button, I can no longer check the checkbox because now when I do it, the screen reader doesn't know what to do. And so from a user perspective, and I'm expecting to find checkboxes, I would also press the letter X as an example to jump to a checkbox on the screen. I'm filling out a form to attend a meeting this morning, and the form had checkboxes for me to check off the items that I was very interested in talking about. So I'd press the letter X and it'd say whatever the checkbox was, and it was saying checkbox not checked. So then I would press the space bar and it'd say checkbox checked. That interaction could only have happened if it was truly a checkbox. If it had been turned from a checkbox to a button, and I'm not saying that's exactly what happens in these overlays, but it's an example of kind of thing, then all of a sudden I can't interact with it. And so from a screen reader perspective, it just stops them in the tracks from using it. And I found many websites that have had the overlays implemented and, you know, decision then as a user, depending on the type of overlay, do I accept the use of the overlay, or do I not accept the use of the overlay because I'm afraid it may break something? Additionally, several of the overlay products also put some toolbars with assistive technology in them, which then confuses the user for new or different features, which complicates things from a user perspective, which is also a little bit misleading that a blind person like myself would go to a website without a screen reader in the first place to then sit down and try to use the website, right? Websites are not just flat text, right? Some are, but for the most part, they're, you know, we have to go in and interact with it. If I'm a shopping store and I can't shop, then I'm not going to use business at that shopping store, right? If I'm going to an airline to buy a ticket and this gets in the way, a federal agency, if I'm trying to get certain goods and services from that federal agency and they put an overlay on it, and I can't interact with it, then I can't use the services of that federal agency.
So there, Matt has brought up a couple of important issues to recognize. First is its interoperability, as you were talking about earlier, Sam. It's the ability for a software application, which an overlay is for all intents and purposes, to properly recognize that an individual is using a type of assistive technology. Matt's using a screen reader, there are screen magnifiers, there are all kinds of AT that are being used by various people with disabilities. So it has to know what that person is using and then work interactively. In theory, if the AT didn't do everything correctly, then a good overlay would just inject or fix or complement it where it was weak, okay, where there was a kind of a hole in the technology. So that would be one approach. But there's also the notion of compatibility, right? So interoperability doesn't always necessarily mean compatibility. So that is another weakness. So Matt mentioned that some overlay types use the notion of a toolbar. You go up there, and it does screen magnification, it turns on the screen reader, things like that. But a user who's already using a screen reader, which is exactly what Matt was saying, why would they need that, right? So there's functionality that the overlays provide that, in fact, is redundant. So even if I'm a website owner, or I don't even think there's websites, but they're digital properties that are all applications, right? They're all dynamic. I haven't seen a flat site in 10 years.
Yeah, there are too many government sites then.
That's true. That's a good point. Touche on that. I think the point was that you don't need to replace technology that already exists for a person with a disability. So what do I do? Well, I have to know, turn it off, which presents another challenge, because now we're going down the privacy and security side of the equation, right? So we know that overlays, and by the way, other technologies, F18, can recognize what kind of AT is accessing their application or their web environment. And they're doing it without the knowledge of the user. So that's where you see privacy.
But if you turn it on, though, Mike, you're automatically giving them that knowledge too, right?
That's so true. But there's still, there's a permission. Did I,
about our data privacy?
And do I really know? I mean, of course, I mean, privacy is an issue all over the world, right? For a person that just puts up their credit card with Amazon, how do I know that Amazon is using that correct, truthfully? We already know they're selling it off to 6 million other clients in doing that. So sure. Ethics is not where we want to go here necessarily. Interoperability is a problem. You mentioned marketing language, right? So that's another thing. At CSUN, I gave the keynote at CSUN to focus on that word of trust. We live and we work with a community of individuals whose life depends on trust, right? A blind person, may have someone where they need to, use an elbow to get around and guide and walk them through. A deaf person needs an interpreter, right? Individuals that are mobility disabilities need a person to perhaps help them with their wheelchair. They don't have a, mechanical wheelchair. So trust is implicit in the very nature of the environment that we live in. And so that trust has been broken when individuals are told and companies are told, inject this software and all the accessibility problems go away.
The IAAP Certified Professional in Accessibility Core Competencies, CPAC, credential is IAAP's foundational certification, representing broad, cross-disciplinary conceptual knowledge about thoughtful design, policy, and management to be inclusive of all. The CPAC is the ideal credential for those who manage and support accessibility, but who may not personally design, implement, or evaluate the technical details of accessible solutions. Check out the exam content outline on our website.
So, Mike, I think I'd like to talk about how that's not possible. And what is it? We've been in this industry for a while, and one of the things around tools that can recognize what is accessible and what's not through the standard.
Mm-hmm.
Those tools, those, whether it's an automated scanning tool or whatever, or these web overlays, they, only can interpret 35%-ish, I'm just going to use that as an ish, right?
Yep, all good.
Ish.
Right. number of the standards. It doesn't mean that it's 35% of the issues on a page, because it could be 75% of the issues, depending on what, items they are. And if it could only find those, how can it fix 100%? Can it do that? I don't think it can if it can't find it, right? And then the side, I'll say this and see what your thoughts are. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're against AI.
No.
In general terms.
Okay. Definitely not.
Okay, so we've settled that. This is not about AI, right? This is about, is somebody verifying that what they fix is actually not going to break the assistive technology for the user, right? So overnight, somebody pushes an update to their website. The overlay at some point recognizes the change and makes a change of the site. What happens, when does a person get involved to verify that the user can still use that site?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. There's the engineering life cycle of any product always requires some sort of quality assurance notion, if not usability, which would be ideal too, to ensure that these enhancements, because I'm sure that's what, I hate the word fixed. I'd rather enhance, right, for the user, him or herself.
But it could be a fix. It could be bad code.
Yeah, bad code is bad code, right.
Yeah. I mean, naming something to button is a fix when it should have been a button in the first
place. Agreed. But I think your point is absolutely spot on. And that is, let the software do its thing, but now I have to go back in that engineering lifecycle and know that my HDA is working so that I can validate and verify that that fix was accurate. Because that's one of the big problems that we're seeing that is existing. The supposed enhancements or fixes are really not fixing or enhancing. In fact, they're making the user interface or the interaction interface worse, right?
I've been to sites where I try to use the screen reader, in our case, JAWS, to navigate a page, and it worked just fine. Then I enabled a toolbar, and then it worked worse.
Yeah. Like,
so where's the other honest business side of it to not sell something
that people don't need?
That they don't need.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, the companies who actually just do testing and tell someone how to fix it, if they don't find the issues, they can't tell you to fix something that doesn't exist. But that part doesn't seem to be part of the business model. It's just to sell you something to give you some level of insurance or assurance, whichever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's no insurance right. But model, as far as I know, on this product, these products. But it's giving you some level of, you think, protection.
I'd like to think that it's going to go back to the AI notion of it, because overlays do integrate AI into a lot of what they're doing. I'd like to think that these are babies in technology. We're really on the very, they're just infantile in their maturity models of the software applications. And there's an awful lot that they need to learn in order to improve the performance and make it better and truly make it complementary.
So I want to ask on that, Mike.
Go ahead.
Matt, how many or have any of the leading overlay widget companies come to work with the Sparrow to find out how best to ensure their products serve the needs and optionality for JAWS and Zoom?
So we've done no contracts with anybody to verify. I mean, I would kind of put this in the same bucket as what we do with Braille display companies. Today, if somebody is building a new Braille display, they come to us and say, we need it to work with JAWS. It's the number one screen reader. It's used in workplace, blah, blah, blah. And there's probably 15 Braille companies out there, and they would ship the product in and they would pay us to build a driver with them and make sure it's compatible and make sure it installs properly, all the typical things you want to do with, you know, configuration. Nobody's done that, you know, from a business-to-business perspective to sit down with us and say, how do we make sure JAWS works better? Because in my opinion, it's not whether or not JAWS works better with something. It's about them coding correctly whatever changes they're making. I mean, JAWS will work with normal code if the code is proper. It's, remember, there's mindset, and I think it was Steve Faulkner said it once. I'm sure Mike remembers this. He'd say, do good HTML before you do ARIA, right?
Yep.
I mean, just make your code good, and you may not need these extra things that we, you know, sometimes use. Well, the same thing here is if they would go through the effort of verifying that whatever fixes they're doing, and if they call something a button, there should be a button. Nobody's creating new widgets that's not unknown. We're just naming the widget the wrong thing or not giving it full context. And there's some of these things, like, let's use tables, for example. Tables can be very complex. Some tables may have not needed to be a table in the first place, right? So people use them for layout. I know that sounds weird to say that today.
But it's true.
And there are techniques to tell a screen reader that it's a layout table. Does the AI know that this, the intent of this table was not to be a table? And then if we move to something that was a table, do they put the proper headers? And what's the intent of the author? Should the row headers be the primary header? Does the column headers be the primary header? Are there sortables ascending or descending? Are there checkboxes? Are they associated to the row headers? Are there delete and insert buttons on the row? And are they associated to the row headers? Is all of that happening through this process? Or is that just kind of say, oh, well, we didn't think about tables being an important process in this?
This is why what we were talking earlier about together. So compatibility is a huge issue here, right? Interoperability is a huge issue. So how do we make it work, right? And what Matt has basically, you know, tossing the proverbial peace offering, so to speak, is we need the overlay industry, and I'm going to say industry, okay, to work with, amongst others, the AT industry, right, and start to, have a collaboration, form some sort of consortium, right, identify what the challenges are. Because in the end, What we all care about is the user experience for people with disabilities. So they can use these things to become part of a very pervasive web and digital society that we live in today. And it's going to get more complex. I mean, what is going to happen once we start to really make XR, extended reality, a true part of our life? Right now, it's a game. You know, for all intents and purposes, it's a game. It's a toy. But this is part of where the industry is headed. And if we can't deal with complex tables, which really are not from an HTML, but from my standpoint, are not nearly as a big a deal as they were 10 years ago, and buttons and other widgets, how, if we can't easily understand how they need to be dealt with in terms of two technologies that are working together, what will we do when we start to really work in some of these more complex emergent technology environments?
I think some of the conversations I have with people is they're unaware that so much of some of the enhancements that are advertised exist in operating systems for people who use digital technology already. So some of these things exist. And so truth in what's being better awareness raisers for people to understand those websites that would have already worked for people who use ATE and their own operating systems and preferences is important, along with the compatibility. So we can help in that arena somewhat. But I think like buttons, interactive things where people can live or learn and playing in their community of choice, those interactive elements, those are barriers we need to make sure we don't create that didn't exist before.
Yeah, right? And there's true techniques to this stuff in terms of making some of the choices. For example, if it's injecting ARIA, is it injecting the right kind at the right place in the right time? ARIA, for those who don't know, accessible rich internet application. And these are techniques to feed stuff to the screen reader. An example would be I hit submit and somewhere on the page it says successfully submitted. Well, they can wrap that in a type of ARIA to have the screen reader announce that. Is the AI even paying attention to that? Again, I'm not blaming AI. This is what, you know, as you said earlier, Mike, it's early phases of how this interacts. But at some point, this is why there's still users or people involved to verify, test, and verify. And I'll add something to this. You know, in our discussions yesterday in one of the keynotes, it was about the 90%. AI can do about 90%. There's still that 10% that has to be done and verified. I think it was Mike Buckley from Be My Eyes. And the last mile, you remember how we, the last mile of matters, the last, you know, whatever that step is, your GPS could get you so far, but it can't get you right to the point of entry of a door. You know, same thing here. Why aren't we using, there's communities of people with disabilities who use assistive technology, go verify things and make sure it's actually working. And if not that, plenty of humans who could do testing, right? And to verify that the fixes that were applied, you know, part of the challenge is that we're in a world of fast build, fast deploy.
Agile
development changed our lifestyle. It's not like you built it and then left it alone for 6 months. Every 2 weeks, you're building something new and fixing, changing something. The same thing can happen. I'm not bothered if I go to a website, there's a bug and I report the bug and in 2 weeks they fix the bug. That doesn't bother me. That's going to happen. Nothing is 100% accessible, no matter what anybody says, ever. It's a moving target because we're not fixed content, right? As Mike says, he hasn't been to a played page in a while. Understanding that it is a moving target is, I think the disability community gets that. But at the same time, having some reasonable return to reality in terms of a product working matters. I think for those businesses who are implementing these kinds of things, the one thing I'd say is that you can't lose customers by implementing something that doesn't work for us. If I can't check into the hotel, guess what? I may go to a different hotel.
So we've got just a minute or so left, gentlemen. So we started off talking about the dynamic of accessibility overlays and enhancements as they may be marketed. And Matt, you talked a bit about interoperability, UL compatibility. What do you want to bring forward so we close out with some key takeaways for us to close out with our discussion today?
So two things.
Yep.
One is we want to develop a digital society that is accessible, usable, and now equitable because of AI. Two, we've got to get all the key players here together in a room and start to collaborate on how to that digital society usable, accessible, and equitable.
I know we have a little controversy in the mic here just for fun. It's not always that easy to get businesses together to collaborate. But At the same time, we do need businesses talking to businesses about this. And we need to test and verify. That's the number one thing that I'm concerned about, is that it's not the problem with the AI. It's the problem with the company's choice to say, all I'm going to do is deploy AI and I solved everything. You didn't. Test and verify.
And one of the things that we work on at IWAT, even our certifications, is what's the impact on people with disabilities? That has to be part of the understanding for the people that design, engineer, implement, and deliver. And so I think that comes back to what our core is, to focusing on people with disabilities having equitable access. Thank you for joining us today. I hope this was of interest to everyone. And we'll invite all of these companies and organizations to work together, perhaps an open invitation to start that coalition or consortia to invite that collaborative work to work towards at least interoperability and compatibility. Maybe as a charge, first charge.
Awesome.
Thank you.
The International Association of Accessibility Professionals offers a variety of membership options for individuals and organizations. Whether you are an expert in accessibility or just starting your journey, join the only global accessibility professional association promoting and improving digital accessibility and physical environments. IAAP advocates for the inclusive design and creation of accessible products, content, services, and spaces to ensure no one is left behind due to a physical, sensory, cognitive, health, or psychological related impairment. United in accessibility, join IAAP and become a part of the global accessibility movement.